This is the Kinky Cast. This is an adult, sexually explicit podcast. If you are under 18 years old, please stop the podcast now. This is episode 55 of our weekly exploration in the kinky world of BDSM and alternative relationships. Views expressed are not representative of the management of the Kinky Cast. Today it's the love show, just in time for Valentine's Day. Here's your loving hosts, Woody and the Beast.
Thanks, Max, and welcome to another edition of the Kinky Cast. Sitting across the table are two people.
People.
One lovely.
One lovely.
And you, Beast.
And me. Yes, she is lovely. We'll bring her on board in just a few minutes.
So how you doing tonight, Beast?
I am good. I also got my lovely Anne in the studio, just as an observer. You didn't notice her?
Well, she's hiding over there. She's
hiding
so quiet.
In the corner. Yeah, she is quiet.
Hi, Anne.
Hi.
She is here. She's buried in her phone on Facebook, I guarantee. Woody, this is a love show.
How lovely is that?
It is. This is our Valentine's Day tribute. And being the Kinky Cast, we cannot do just a chocolates and rose show. We got to be a little more unique than that.
Well, this show is for your sweethearts. And just remember that the Beast and I are sweethearts, and there is a donate button on kinkycast.com. And we would love to hear from your wallet.
Don't send us flowers. Send us the money.
That would keep us very happy and healthy on the air every week like we have been for the last 50, I don't know how many episodes.
Yes, by the time this rolls around, we've been over a year at it. So yeah.
Yes, indeed.
The love show, our kinky take on it. We have several people. In the studio with us is Rosemary Pink. We'll be speaking on toys, but we also got Elka coming to us from the Carolinas on relationships. And we had Red Nightingale that will be discussing poly with us.
Sounds like a rich show tonight.
It is indeed. We're trying something a little different with this show.
Mixing it up, as it were.
Mixing it up. Rosemary, hello.
Hi.
Rosemary Pink. And she is in pink. It is with blue hair.
Purely a coincidence.
Well, the blue hair is, has the hair been pink too?
A long time back, but I've been in the blue-green range for about 13 years now.
Oh, wow.
I'm committed.
You're committed to it. Rosemary Pink, she started Friction about 3 years ago, and Friction is a very unique toy company. Why did you start Friction?
Well, I moved back and I had always sort of assumed that someone would have started sort of a feminist sex toy store in the model of Good Vibes and Babeland in Nashville by the time I was done with school. But I arrived back and no one had. So I really wanted something that could be sex education focused, where you could work with people who are buying their very first toys, people who were shy about it. So I started working, doing private appointments and some smaller toy parties. I don't really do the sort of jokey bachelorette party thing. That was never really my focus. There's a lot of cheesy humor out there about sex. It's well supplied. I was never gonna be the supplier of that. So I really wanted to focus on well-designed, body-safe toys that were made by responsible companies, and I didn't want to have to sell anything that I didn't think was a reasonable material and toy.
And listeners, is exactly the reason we're bringing Rosemary to you tonight is to help share with many of you first-time toys buyers in the wake of the 50 Shades phenomena, that movie that was released. Well, actually, it was released last night at midnight. We have new listeners that are in the craze and are waiting to buy their first toy. Why do people buy sex toys?
Well, we've found sex toys as far back in the range of dildos, almost as far back as the species has been carving in Waterstone. So dildos have been around forever in like lots of different forms. For a while, they were getting very ornate and adorned. But sort of what we see now really came about out of the 70s and actually came about from a disabled man named Grosnell Duncan, who he made a toy for his wife and took them to some disability conferences and then to a feminist sex toy store. And that kicked off the entire silicone dildo existence.
So the silicone dildo is the perennial poster child, boy, girl, toy for the movement. But that's not the only sex toy out there.
No, no, of course. There are lots of different types. There are toys for cocks. There are toys that are for exercising your pelvic floor muscles. There are toys that are anal. In fact, they've now adapted some Kegel balls to being butt plugs because guys kept stealing women's Kegel balls.
Oh, wow.
So now they're flanged and safer for anal use.
Toys for cocks. I give to that charity every year at Christmas time.
I think you got a different charity or I'm going to be waiting at your door for the people they're collecting.
You do know I'm kinky.
I do know that, but I want to meet those collection people for Toy for Cocks.
Absolutely. We'll show them downstairs.
So people buy sex toys to enrich their sex lives.
Yeah. So people used to see them as sort of things that were used individually, guiltily, like bought in a trench coat on the bad side of town. But sort of as part of sexual education and part of sort of culture getting more comfortable with sex, it's really become something that is a big part of people's like relationships and sex lives, where couples are really engaging with it far more than you've seen before.
All right. So what do you look for? First, you personally, and then the buyer in a sex toy.
Well, I think the first thing you should look for is material. Because there is no regulation in this industry. There's no one overseeing the materials going into sex toys.
So this is a Republican business model with little business regulation. All right. Thank you, Republicans.
And safety be damned.
And safety be damned. Okay.
And there's not a lot of, it's not really going to be very easy for someone to come out and be like, I want to be the politician to take on like sex toy, like toxic reform and put advanced regulation.
I think I may run for Congress now.
Yeah, on the dildo platform.
So no one really has been trying to like get the FDA to cover this. So there's nobody testing toys to make sure that they are safe as part of a sort of overseeing of an industry. So you really sort of have to watch out for yourself. So one of the most important things to do is finding a material that is not toxic. There are a lot of toys out there that have been made with sort of like the jelly rubber vague concept of something where they're going to be clear. They may be colored, but they're sort of gummy. It's something that's used sort of to be soft and sort of more approachable, but it's not a stable material.
So this is somebody's science project gone very, very wrong.
Well, it looked good, it felt good, but after it sits in a box for about a month, it starts to ooze and collect dust and everything else.
Yes, and if you search toxic sex toy jars, you'll find an example of some of what happens when you put toxic sex toys in a jar together. They will begin to melt, and they will begin to generate moisture on their own. One of the feminist sex toy store-like movements has sort of been about investigating materials, making sure that people know what's going into the toys. And one of the ways that they were showing this was to put like sex toys that were notoriously made of unsafe materials in a jar together. And so there are several different types of jars you can see where you can see the things melt and sort of generate mineral oil and like ooze together. And, you know, I have one at home. Lots of people do them.
So now that we got the fear in people to be aware of what they're buying for their sweetheart, what they're putting in their sweetheart's various orifices, and Anne's over
that's
here.
Orify.
Orify. And Anne's over here rolling her eyes at me because I may be guilty sometimes of buying some of these cheap toys. Where do you go to get quality?
The good news is that because sort of people have come along to try and push the industry this way, Tontus, for instance, was really devoted to getting silicone into virtually all stores. So you, even if you only have like a mainstream sticky floor sex toy store in your town, you can probably still find good toys. Again, Tontus is a great manufacturer.
Spell that, please.
Tantus. Okay. Tontus Incorporated. And they've been really instrumental in examining materials, and Metis has gotten toys into almost all places. So there are brands that you can look for. Amazon is very tempting to a lot of people, and I totally get that. They also, however, do not have a lot of oversight over their sellers. And there is a lot of counterfeit and espionage in this industry, amusingly enough. And so sometimes people order toys there that are by a good brand, but they're not getting the actual toy by that brand.
Well, I can't imagine a lump of silicone or silicone-like substance goes for 50 cents. The toy goes for a lot more. So
yes.
So there is profit margin for the, and the cheap toys sell them at good prices. Now, the good toys are not cheaply made or...
No, and you're not going to find, you know, a large, like, dildo in silicone for $10. You're probably looking to start in, like, the 50s and 60s. Butt plugs might start in, like, the 20s, but you're generally... It's an investment because it's not a toy that's going to degrade in your drawer after a year where you're going to be like, oh, wow, this is a gooey mess. And that's kind of alarming because that was used internally. So you can find good toys anywhere. Research into brands is important. I'm always happy to talk people through this. But it's rely more on the brand than the store, because stores will sell a lot of stuff.
And listeners, we're going to have Rosemarie's website on our Hot Links page. But what's that website?
ShopFriction.com.
ShopFriction.com. All one word. Okay, we'll have that on the Hot Links page.
So you get this really high quality dildo, and then you put some cheap lubricant on it, and it starts to break it down.
Yes. Now, one of the important things is that you need to make sure that your lube is compatible. And even if you're putting a condom over it to make sure that it's safe for another partner to use or something like that, you need to look into what sort of lube is on the condom. In general, silicone lube shouldn't be used on silicone toys. Not just a bad rule to keep in mind. There may be exceptions, and you can discuss those on a brand-by-brand basis, but in general, don't mix silicone lube and silicone toys.
The keyword is water-based.
Keyword is water-based. Water-based lube is great. Slickwid makes great lubes. They're very toy-safe. They're vegan. All of the good fluffy things. Yes, in general, you don't want to mix silicone lube, and water-based lube is good. Most things are going to be safer silicone except silicone. And for other toys, silicone will very likely be safe.
What happens after you use this toy? Do you just throw it under the bed until the next time?
Oh, I have dust bunnies that I collect them.
I suspect that happens more than we would like to think about. I think we've all guiltily tossed something out of the way and just gone for a nap. But it is good to clean things definitely before you use them. A lot of toys now are magnetically charged, so they're waterproof because they don't have any sort of exposed plugs. So lots of things are like just washable in a sink with like 7th generation free and clear dishwasher detergent. Probably not going to be thrilled to be name checked here in retrospect. You can use like soap and water with silicone toys. You can wash them on the top level of your dishwasher.
I had a Dame friend that had a dildo day once a week because she had commercial clients, and she would just fill the dishwasher and she had to be really careful that the family didn't open it.
It's called a dick washer.
Dick washer. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because I sell these toys and I show them to clients who handle them, and because, you know, it's flu season and just in general, I think you want things neat, and good Lord, there's a cat in my house. So the fur is just always excited to try and get into that box. I do spend a lot of time washing dildos as well. And yes, I luckily have a very, very nice roommate who puts up with a lot of eccentricities.
So listeners, that's Top Rack.
Top Rack. Very important.
With heat dry off.
That's good to know.
Yes. Now, some of our listeners are going to ask this question. Does size matter?
Well, size matters to size queens and not as much to anybody else. The fact is that for vibrators, size of a vibrator is not going to be important to women because a small clitoral vibrator may be much more effective for them at orgasming than a like giant internal vibrator. Where you're hitting, which erogenous zones, much more important than size. And there's a tendency for people to have sort of the ordering dinner when you're really hungry issue with sex toys, where they're like, that looks fun and awesome, and I'm going to buy that. And they get it home and they're like, I need a lot of warm up for that. And I maybe don't want a toy that I have to warm up quite that much for every time.
Now, the thoughtful men out there that are buying for their wives and sweeties and their male lovers and so forth, be kind of conservative, in other words, yes, on these.
Yes. You never want to, a little smaller is usually better than too big.
Too big.
And in general, you know, a dildo is no more representative of what the average man should be than a blow up sex toy doll isn't representative of what a woman should be. Like, these are not things that are replacing men or women.
Now, you mentioned one other toy as we wrap up this wonderful segment. And listeners, we will have Rosemary back, I promise.
Let me just interject one thing. If you are going to buy a toy and you're not sure about it, see if you can smell it in store. In general, inert materials aren't going to be off-gassing chemicals. So if you can smell it really strongly, especially if they've added something to scent it to overcome the chemicals, that is very unlikely to be a super body-safe toy.
Ooh.
That's good information.
That is good. I hadn't thought about that one. Makes total sense. But you mentioned a category that we didn't touch at all until very recently, vibrators.
Yes, yes. I think really the most popular of sex toys in my experience, or at least in my customers. Vibrators, again, one of the first five items to be electrified for home usage after toasters. So they're incredibly popular, incredibly important to women, some of whom may not be able to orgasm without them, may experience their first orgasm with a vibrator and then learn how to make themselves come after that. I just think they're incredibly important.
And I'm still remembering Maggie Gyllenhaal's scene in the movie.
Hysteria!
Oh,
Hysteria!
Yes. Oh, yes.
Listeners, there's a movie out there called Hysteria. Great. It's the history of the vibrator.
And there's so much history there as well. And it's all very fascinating because we've known sort of so little about women's sexuality. And we're learning stuff still, and there's still not enough research into it. Because again, funding is tricky for these types of things.
I am now getting ready for my congressional bid. I have a platform. Rosemary, thank you for coming to us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
This has been wonderful. You will come back?
I would love to come back.
Absolutely.
I can talk about this stuff forever.
If I can see a full episode in our future on nothing but toys.
And we're going to go through every category.
Every category.
Oh, that sounds like fun. I can't wait.
Do we get to bring in some demo dollies?
I think she needs to bring in
demo
tools.
I'll bring in the whole kit.
Ooh.
And you need to bring in the demo dollies.
I'll bring in the demo dollies. Ooh. Ooh.
I see a photo page.
Yes, we do. All right. Thank you, Rosemary.
Thank you.
On the phone with us is Midori from San Francisco. How are you?
I'm doing good.
You have a big event coming up.
I sure do. I've been doing this for over a decade. It's called AIDS Life Cycle.
And what is that?
It's this amazing experience. It's a 7-day bicycle ride for 2,500 cyclists riding from San Francisco to Los Angeles. And there are 600 of us roadie volunteers. I'm one of the volunteer roadies. And what we do, we cycle, we pedal, we cry. It hurts. It's amazing. It's beautiful. It's fantastic. And do this to raise funds and awareness for critically needed HIV services and education.
And how can our listeners help with this?
See, the thing is, I'm fundraising too, and this year my fundraising has been really, really challenged, and I need your help. I'm sick of my friends getting sick. I am also sad from various long-term survivors dying from, quote, heart attack, quote, cancer, and it's all HIV related. I'm also frustrated with the ongoing lack of education. So here's what I would love to get help in. One, I'll be doing all my Twitters and social media, so cheer me on as I post photos from the road. That's one. And I'll be wearing silly bunny hats. And then two, donate to my AIDS Life Cycle fundraising, because they have 70 cents to the dollar is going to services. And there are people that are living longer and able to live a healthy life because of this. And there are people that are not serial converting or becoming positive, and are people are having smarter sex because of the programs that are funded by AIDS Life Cycle. So I hope all of you out there will help me out.
Okay, listeners, go to the KinkyCast homepage. Look for the button that says AIDS Life Cycle Donate Now. Push the button and it will take you right to the place where you need to drop a few bucks into a Midori's cup for AIDS awareness.
Thank you so much.
We're back with Elka. Elka is a relationship counselor coming to us from the East Coast of the United States. And she has considerable work experience with the kink community. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Give us a little bit about your background.
I joined the kinky community probably back in 1995. Found it online, much like most of the people my age did. got really involved in the main scene, what there was of it at the time, which was not very much. Then I moved to North Carolina in the early 2000s and started volunteering at some local munch groups and really found a niche and got to meet a lot of people and finally kind of discovered all those things that I was kind of curious about but never really knew existed or people actually did. Then in 2004, I ran for my first leather title and won, and then produced the North Carolina Leather Contest for probably the next 7 or 8 years. And now I don't do a whole lot publicly because I'm focusing more on the research and counseling aspects of my career, but I did finish my doctoral degree a couple years ago and did my dissertation research on the mental health seeking habits of individuals who participate in BDSM.
Oh, wow.
And I'm very interested in topics about personality in BDSM.
So you actually made us a research subject, which we dearly need more of, because there's so little documentation about the community from a positive standpoint, its own, the negative effects and so forth. So thank you for the research.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
Now, we are coming to our listeners with our love show. This is our Valentine's Day show. And being kinky, we're just not going to do roses and flowers and chocolates. So we are here in this post 50 Shades moment to talk about what makes a good, healthy DS relationship.
Well, I think, you know, good DS relationships are very much like any good, healthy relationship, be it between a girlfriend and boyfriend, two girlfriends, two boyfriends, a man and his wife. They encompass different aspects that perhaps more traditional relationships do not. So I think first and foremost, the people in any type of DS relationship need to have some level of compatibility. Are they interested in the same things? Do they have similar desires and goals? Do they enjoy spending time together outside of the DS aspects of their relationships? If they don't, they may not enjoy each other for too long inside the aspect of a DS relationship. Communication is also extremely important, and I know that we hear that a lot. You know, Dr. Phil, everybody who talks about relationships talks about communication. And I think sometimes what we lose sight of is that that has to include not only speaking to our partner, but also listening to our partner. The other aspect of that is, you know, when you talk with your partner about something that's bothering you or something that you want to try, are you able to be soft on the person and firm on the issue rather than making it personal and setting your partner on the defensive? Are you able to address issues calmly, rationally? But are you also able to get your point across and get your own needs met as well as those of your partner?
And in a power exchange dynamic, I imagine that becomes a little more complicated.
Yes, exactly. And that kind of brings me to my next point of emotional intelligence. And this is something that I think we do more than we really know what it is. But this is the idea of, you know, how well do we know ourselves? Do we know that if my partner does X, Y, or Z, that's really going to push a button for me? And if I know that, I need to share that with my partner. And I see this a lot of times with submissive people, more so than dominant people, probably because I've spent more time with submissive people, is that idea of, well, if I say anything, then I'm not being a good submissive person. But it's important to say what you need and get your needs met.
That is so important. You can't expect your partner to be the mind reader. You can't expect them to always know what's perfect. It requires communication and a willingness to have some vulnerability there in order to make it work. And that is from both sides, top and bottom.
Yes, exactly. And that's where the idea of trust comes in. You know, if you know that your partner is emotionally intelligent, knows what his or her kind of triggers are, knows that they can communicate what they want, then you can really trust your partner to know that he or she is going to do the right thing. And if they don't, it's not intentional. You know, it just could be an error at some point.
This is, for many people, an exploration. And all these new couples that are going to be finding this sparked by the 50 Shades, seeing it on the screen, they are coming into this and there are going to be mistakes made. So this is, it's important to realize that these mistakes are not always intentional and definitely not always malicious.
Exactly. Exactly.
We have a lot of new people. They're fanning the flames by this mainstreaming of our lifestyle.
Yes.
We were not mainstream until very recently, but now we are. And we have partners that have been together for a while. And one is feeling urges to go places. So how does one bring up the question of a DS relationship with a current or a new partner?
I think that there are several ways that you can go about it. And it might be different if you're currently with somebody who has not ever shown an interest or explored this type of a lifestyle versus if you're seeking a new relationship that's not already in the works. I think for someone who's currently in a relationship with somebody who is on the more vanilla side, I think this idea of how mainstream the lifestyle has become can actually be an advantage as well as a disadvantage, because there are lots of places you can, you know, the Big Bang Theory has had scenes that have had spanking in them. Shows like NCIS have had pro-doms and other displays of lifestyle activities in their shows.
And we cannot forget Lady Heather from CSI.
Exactly. And even, you know, the books 50 Shades of Grey or the movies 50 Shades of Grey are good places to start. You know, you can say to your partner, do you like that? What did you think about that? And kind of start a dialogue about something that may or may not interest them. What's kind of funny to me is my husband and I went out for dinner on New Year's Eve, and there was a couple sitting behind us who, it sounded to us, this was maybe their first date. And at one point, the gentleman said, you know, I really like Nicholas Sparks' movies and books. And the woman kind of paused for a minute and said, well, I don't really like Nicholas Sparks. I'm more of a 50 Shades of Grey kind of gal.
Oh.
Yeah. And so that really kind of changed their dialogue. And she was able to start kind of expressing some of these things that she enjoyed doing sexually in a way that kind of felt organic, you know, and not just, oh, by the way, I, you know, want to be tied up and spanked, or I want to tie you up and spank you, which might have really set him off.
Sounds like a very enlightened couple that were that were going through the motions in a very healthy way there. And I wonder if he wasn't throwing the Nicholas Sparks out as a line just to sound good.
He probably was, and he probably was quite shocked at what he got back.
Well, he did well. He did well.
Yeah. So I think using those things, the other thing is the use of those BDSM checklists that I actually don't hear a lot about anymore. But just using those as a way, you can say, just fill this out and we'll compare notes. And then you'll find out what your partner might be okay with trying and what they really definitely would not ever be okay trying.
And listeners, you can find a comprehensive checklist that has been on the KinkyCast website since nearly day one.
In the Tools tab.
In the Tools tab, we have it in Excel format, PDF format, and Microsoft Word format. So for all of your geeky sorts out there, we have a checklist on the KinkyCast site. So go and check it out. And these checklists, for our listeners that are a little newer, can you help them out a bit with that checklist, Elka?
Sure. Most of them have a pretty comprehensive list of different BDSM type activities. Anything from, gosh, watching somebody else have sex to actually participating while somebody else is watching to bondage, all the way up to if you like to have someone, I don't know, brand you, for example. So it goes from really tame, really easy things that you might not even think of as kinky might be included on that list, all the way up to some of the more extreme things that you might hear about somebody doing. And then what they also will typically have you do is rate, you know, have you ever tried this? Did you like it? Would you ever be willing to try it? Would you never be willing to try it? So it's a really nice way of going through a whole list of things. And some of them are kind of ridiculous sounding even. So it's a nice way you can be kind of humorous with your partner too, and maybe add, I think sometimes adding humor in those kinds of conversations can help make it feel maybe a little bit less strange or threatening than it could be at times.
And if you're new, I highly recommend a dictionary handy, because some of the terms are definitely going to surprise you and you're going to have to look them up.
Yes.
And dictionary in this case probably means Urban Dictionary online, because some of the terms are new and are rather vague if you look them up in a vanilla dictionary.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the Urban Dictionary. That's a good point, Woody. Good point indeed. I have used the term DS in our conversation tonight. Elka, can you help our listeners understand what DS means? Because for many of them, they're looking for the DS element as well as the BDSM element of the interaction. So what's the difference in the two?
Sure. I think that largely also is kind of dependent on the people in that relationship. The way I generalize it is DS relates, the D part stands for dominant, and to me that's any type of dominant person in a relationship. So it could be the dominant, it could be the sadist, it could be the master, it could be the trainer, it could be the daddy, the mommy, anybody who kind of takes on that role of being in charge. Whereas the S part stands for the person who tends to be on the receiving end of that authority. So the submissive, the slave, the pony, the boy, the girl, the puppy, the horse, whatever the submissive kind of role. And then in a DS relationship, I consider that to be any situation in which two or more people are engaging in that power exchange together. So I even consider play partners who only play, you know, once every 2 or 3 months to, for that moment, have a dominant-submissive relationship. And then that's just defined however they want to define it. BDSM, I describe as the activities of the DS relationship. So the flogging, the spanking, the giving orders, receiving orders, the protocols, the rituals, those all kind of fall under the BDSM umbrella in my mind.
So the DS is more about personality types and the role that you're playing in the relationship. And the BDSM is about the specific acts that you find arousing and erotic and exciting.
Yes.
And many people, that's spanking. Many people, that's something a little more interesting and intense. For some, spanking is an incredible experience, though. So it's all individualized. And that's the interesting thing about this lifestyle. It is very individual, isn't it?
And I think that's kind of a big caution, too, that new people especially, I think, need to kind of keep in the back of their mind, is we sometimes engage in what's called all or nothing thinking. And if you see a relationship, let's say in 50 Shades of Grey or in any kind of erotic writing, you sometimes think, oh, well, that's the way it has to be because it's in this book. And that's not the case at all. It's really individual and up to the people in that relationship to determine what's going to happen, when, how, etc.
And those of us that have been in this lifestyle for decades, like yourself and myself and Woody, we know that there's no one true way to do this.
Exactly.
Everyone has a little bit of uniqueness. In the 50 Shades, we're talking about a more of a MS relationship, which is master and slave. Now, those words are kind of loaded in our community, aren't they?
Yes, they certainly are.
And is this something that somebody should be rushing? If you're brand new, is the master-slave dynamic one you should be rushing to find?
No, definitely not. That's another point I want to make sure to get out there is, if you are just starting out, even with a new partner, and you've been experienced, or if both people in the relationship, or three or four, or however many, are just starting this kind of relationship, go slow and start small. Don't just jump right in and say, well, here's my bank account, here's my car keys, my house keys, you just are in control. Tell me when to go to the bathroom and our world will be happy. You know, start out with some of the little things. Try spanking. Try a day of having the dominant person in the relationship, who would be the master, perhaps, giving the order. See how that feels. Were there things that didn't work? I think sometimes we do make the mistake of jumping in feet first, and that's sometimes a wonderful thing to do. But I think there are a lot of risks emotionally and physically that can happen in these types of relationships, then I think it's best to start with smaller steps and then work your way up.
Since we are in the love show, and you did mention it, 2, 3, 4, however many, many of our listeners will be also curious about adding spice to the relationships in the form of another partner, either short-term or long-term. What are some of the concerns that go with that and the rewards that come with it?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the rewards can be, you know, can be many, from having someone to maybe share the housework with, or someone who can, you know, help plan things for a family or for a third or fourth partner. There are definitely a lot of joys that can come. I think the hardest part are some of the challenges that can arise. And those tend to come, when I was talking earlier about that idea of emotional intelligence, you know, are you doing it for the right reasons, or are you agreeing to it just because your partner wants to do it? If you're doing it just to satisfy your partner, it's probably not going to be a healthy situation for anybody in the relationship.
But that doesn't mean that you can't explore it with your partner on a limited one-time basis, but to enter it into as a part of your ongoing relationship, that's a different story, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's where, you know, this idea of communicating about it, starting small, kind of comes in. You know, again, not jumping in with both feet unless all people are aware of what their triggers might be, if they know they have jealousy issues. If it's something they've all done before, the process might be quicker. But if it's something new, you know, definitely, you know, try playing with somebody else at a party just to see how that feels for both people involved. It can really help eliminate some of those pitfalls.
And we're talking about adding a third party that is where you had two relationships. All of a sudden, you have much more complex. You have a relationship between him and her, her and her, mm-hmm. her and him. It just gets really, uh-huh. really complicated, doesn't it? As far as the communication
goes. It sure can.
Elka, I want to thank you for coming with us tonight on this little journey. I hope we've helped some people getting their relationships and helping realize their fantasies and their dreams.
Well, thank you for having me. I do too. I hope my information was helpful.
Hi, this is Woody, producer of the Kinky Cast. I just want to thank all our listeners for all the great comments we've got back from you. You know, this costs money, and since our staff is all volunteer, and we do this as a labor of love since we're all members of the Kinky community, one of the problems that we have is paying for bandwidth, server space, and even keeping our equipment up to speed. Our studio equipment is old, but it works, and we just need to keep it working. If you feel that you could donate a few bucks to keep us alive, that would be great. Everyone here and the listeners will appreciate the quality episodes that we can bring you every week. As we start the new calendar year, we have great stuff planned, and I want everybody to benefit from the educational aspects, the entertainment aspects, and the really important people that have something to say. So join us in the new year. Go to kinkycast.com and click on the donate button. We're back, Beast. And
that was great, Elka, coming to us from the Carolinas on relationships. That was some really interesting information there.
Well, she is an expert in her field.
She is, and a wide field it is. And as she was finishing up, she mentioned Polly and talked about Polly just a bit. And recently, I was talking to a young lady, Red Nightingale, on FetLife, who had posted a short but interesting essay on Polly.
She's a real interesting woman.
Yes, she is. And I happened to catch on tape our conversation, and we're going to bring that to our listeners now. We have with us this evening Red Nightingale, a complex woman who sometimes is lost. She freely admits and enjoys that search. Welcome, Red Nightingale.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
We are grateful for you coming on. Red has wrote a essay on something that is new to her, I believe, about Polly. Is this a new thing for you, Red, or is it a long time?
It's been I've been in an open marriage for about 3.5 years. Been married for 13, and really discovered about 3 years ago that I was poly.
Wow.
And from there, it's been great. Yeah.
That was a complex, to borrow your own word, discovery, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. It was.
And how did Mr. Red take it?
Very well, actually. He was very open whenever I approached him with the idea of an open marriage. And we have never been happier. Of course, it's not always easy.
No, it's
not. Not at all, but, you know, lots of communication and lots of being open with each other. And it works really well for us.
And isn't communication what's important to a good marriage or relationship anyway?
Oh, definitely. But I think you have to have an even stronger sense of it. You have to not be afraid to come to the other person with any thoughts that you're having, bad, good. And you also have to be open to them coming to you with the same thing. Whenever you bring other people into a relationship, there's a lot of feelings that you might not be familiar with, all of a sudden you're having to deal with. And if you're not open and honest with each other, then it's not going to work. And I feel like we're fortunate that we had a very good base to build on, having been together so long before we did open. You know, from there, it's been quite an adventure, but something that I definitely would not want to change.
Yay.
Yeah.
Now, this essay, I wandered mm-hmm. across on FET. We were not mm-hmm. friends, and it jumped up on my feed, and I found it quite enlightening. It was short and sweet, and can you share that essay with us now?
I sure can. It's titled, My Thoughts on Being Poly. Being poly isn't everyone's cup of tea, but to me it makes perfect sense. I liken it to a parent having more than one child. You never love one child more than another. You don't love instead of, you love as well as. The concept of having to stop loving one person in order to love another is bizarre to me. I love my children, my friends. I don't have to lose any one of them to make room for another. My heart is big enough, and for me, it's the same with partners. The concept of one true love is another that amuses me. Whether love be for a fleeting moment or a lifetime, it's true because it came from within you. To me, being poly is about more than being open. It's about having the capacity to love more than one person and to love in more than one way. It's about being open to love, and it's about giving love back. It's about meaningful, committed, mutually beneficial relationships with more than one person at a time. It's about not being afraid to say, I love you. Removing the connotations, the stereotypes, and the pressures that can come with those three little words, and just letting love be.
That is simply a beautiful, beautiful statement of what many of us are poly have come to understand about the poly lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you didn't Thank grow you. Up poly, I bet, did you?
Oh, no. Far from it. Far from it, yes. I was raised a good little Southern Baptist girl who never did anything like this. So, yeah, it's far removed from anything I was raised of.
But now, for our new listeners and the newer people mm-hmm. out there, mm-hmm. poly isn't cheating, is it?
No, it's not. It's cheating if nobody knows about it, if your spouse or your other partners don't know about the others. Everything that we do is out in the open. You know, we do not have a don't ask, don't tell policy. We know who each other is dating. And there's no secrets there. Now, we might not get into all of the intimate details, but you know, there's no hiding. If we're going out, we tell the other person who we're going out with and where we'll be and what time we'll be home. So no, it's definitely not cheating, not in any way.
And this takes a while to get your head wrapped around, doesn't it?
It does. It takes a lot of having to really search within yourself and know what limitations you have. It's easy to say, oh, I have no problem being poly, but my husband, on the other hand, I don't know if I want him to see somebody else. Yeah, you have to be open to those feelings that can arise from that. Those feelings of jealousy, and they do happen. You know, if you don't feel like you're getting enough of your partner's time and they're going out with somebody else, you've got to be ready to deal with those feelings. So it's a back and forth, with your partner and with yourself. You have to really dig deep and get to know yourself before you can ever think about, approaching this with a partner.
Again, we're back to good, sound relationship advice is know yourself.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And, you know, I came to the realization that nobody else but yourself can make you happy, and also came to the realization that not one person can meet every single one of your needs. You know, my husband and I have a fantastic marriage, a fantastic relationship, but there's some things that some needs that I have that he's not able to meet. And it came down to, do I suffer through my marriage and just say, well, I'm just going to push those needs down and never have them fulfilled, which in the end makes for a pretty miserable life? Or do I approach this and say, you know, this is what I need also. I know you can't do it. Can I find somebody else who can? It doesn't mean I love you any less. It doesn't mean I want to leave you. It doesn't mean that I don't love our life together. It just means somebody else might be the one that can fulfill those needs that he can't. And, you know, he was thankfully enough more than willing to take that plunge with me.
I believe in today's world, which has become much more complex and diverse, that we mm-hmm. have more complex and diverse needs, that it's harder and harder for a single person to meet everything that we
mm-hmm.
that we have a interest or a desire in. Now, there is mm-hmm. something that is always the rallying cry of the poly world. I'll get my calendar.
Uh-huh.
The problem with scheduling, how do you juggle the time?
Oh, it's not easy. I just graduated from school, and I'm starting a new career. So add in school and two small children and a boyfriend and a husband, it can get to be a little much. We share our calendars, and our rule is, first of all, family will always come first. And if one of us feels like the other is away from home too many nights, then they'll step in and go, hey, I'd like to have you at home tonight. I try to only be gone one, maybe two nights a week. He tries to do the same. It's a little bit easier for me with my schedule. Mine's a little bit more flexible. It's not a 9-to-5 job. Yeah. So it makes it a little bit easier for me. But it's just really good communication. Again, that's what it comes down to. And being cognizant of the fact that they want to spend time with you too. You know,
yeah.
you just spread yourself as you can, and sometimes you just hope for the best that you're making the right decisions. And if you aren't, you'll know it.
Oh yeah.
You'll know it.
Yes. It will come. It will come, but that's where that communication and openness come in handy.
Exactly.
That there is an open dialogue and doesn't fester and turn into something worse.
Exactly. Right.
So you're going to continue with this exploration, I take it.
We're going to keep going. You know, we every so often, you know, if things are getting a little maybe stressed out, something like that, you know, things with other relationships are going in different ways. You know, we kind of look at each other and say, do you want to close our marriage? And overwhelmingly, it's always been no. You know, we want the other person to be happy more than anything.
Your partner, you said he was a boyfriend. Was he Polly, or did you introduce him to this concept?
I think he might have been a little beforehand, but we are no longer together as of a few weeks ago.
I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it's okay. Life's changed. So I think he fully embraced it. It was a long distance relationship, so it made it really difficult.
There were
a lot of trips that I was having to take. Of course, society does not look at Polly favorably.
Mm.
So because of that, including family, they really don't look at it favorably. Being parents, grandparents, stuff like that. There was a lot of having to make up reasons why I was leaving to go out of town again. Even though my husband knew everything, where I was, what I was doing, when it came down to the day-to-day stuff as far as taking care of the kids and who's going to get them to and from school and all that, it was just getting a little too difficult. And with me graduating and now starting a new job, that was going to be even more difficult. So life changes. And with that, relationships do also. So any person I'm with going forward has to be 100% okay with a poly relationship. So far in the community, as far as in the kink community, that hasn't been a problem.
In the kink community, we have a huge poly contingency.
Right.
We have a lot of monos also,
mm-hmm.
so there's room for everybody. I want to thank you, Red Nightingale, for talking with us this evening.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
And we hopefully will have you back again and be talking about how your exploration in life is going. So thank you.
That sounds terrific. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Well, Woody, what did you think?
That is a very interesting individual.
She is, isn't she? And she's got a couple of years under her belt here.
And she's quite accomplished in her professional field also, it seems.
Yes, she is. I hope that our listeners have enjoyed our podcast tonight.
It was prepared with loving care.
Listeners, this has been The Love Show with The Beast and Woody. We've had Red Nightingale, Rosemary Pink, and Elka with us as special guests tonight.
We want to hear what everybody thinks about the show, and if you want more like it, let us know, and we'll manufacture them for you. And to close tonight's show, we have Decadent Toddy from London with a few words.
It was a stormy Friday night, the sort that really fucks with your hair when you've just straightened it. I was standing on the curb outside my workplace in mid-fight with an umbrella that refused to open, when a taxi accelerated through the puddle in front of me, drenching my stockings and most of my skirt. Then a suited stud stepped out of the neon fizzing darkness. "Stop pouting and get in the car," he declared. I considered clouting him with my umbrella, but then I glimpsed the sleek black convertible. A thought danced through my mind. If I fuck him tonight, it might be sunny tomorrow. I can get him to take me out in his Ferrari. "I like how your mind works, but it probably isn't going to be sunny tomorrow," the stranger offered, throwing open the passenger door. His green eyes sparkled wickedly as he said it. "But if you're really naughty, maybe we can string this out until summer." "What, you like a mind reader or something?" "Something," he said dryly, "and this is fate calling." I knew he was different. Most men try, he didn't need to. He was the sort of man I'd have handed my knickers to in a crowded room just to get his attention, and he knew it, which both irritated and fascinated me. I like danger, he seemed to know that too. Maybe he had a sixth sense for crazy bitches, I wasn't sure. The engine roared into life, and when it did, I was sitting in the passenger seat with no clue where I was being taken or by whom. I'm pretty sure we both got a rush out of that. "My name's Deck," he said as we weaved through the city in an eclectic neon blur playing out in synergy with the engine's powerful roar. So I knew his name, and that he was obscenely confident and disgustingly handsome. That was more than enough to fuck him. The penthouse was a pleasing bonus, I won't lie, but when he tied me to his bed and left me staring up at my naked self in the ceiling mirrors while he answered some emails, I knew I'd found something interesting. "Congratulations, you're my new PA," he declared languidly about an hour later, and then picked up a pinwheel that had been glimmering on his bedside table. "Now I'm going to break you in." And so it began. I'm Violet, head secretary and PA here at Decadence Inc., where naughty girls come to work so they can play.
You have been listening to episode 55 of The Kinky Cast. The Kinky Cast is a production of Rooster in the Round. Next week we bring you Master Kevin and Slave Fairy, Southeast Leather Fest title holders. On behalf of Woody, the Beast, and all our kinky crew, I'm Loving Max. See you next week.